Nah, I love my wife, but I'm not going to get her name tattooed on my body.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, Tony Miller returns to talk with us about victimless crimes, including drug laws and blasphemy, which is a victimless crime because God doesn't exist.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm one of your hosts, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my wonderful co-hosts, the couple Nick and Molly Glover.
Huzzah.
Hello.
They're still
Huzzah.
Married. They're still married.
We are.
Yeah, it's a relief. It's a relief to all of us because if they ever get divorced, this will be much more awkward.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah.
Think of the podcast. We're not having children, so won't we think of you got to think
the
of the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be like alternate weeks. You guys will be on here. We are joined once again by Tony Miller from the Minnesota Renaissance Festival and elsewhere. Seamus the Insulter, for those of you who have been out to the Minnesota Renaissance Festival, I highly suggest you look him up and pay him to insult you.
Thank you. Good morning.
You're welcome. And our topic for today, I think, is a very interesting, very big topic.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll be able to cover it with some amount of skill in the next 30 minutes or so, is victimless crimes.
Mm. Or consensual crimes.
Yeah. Yes. So we started with talking about things like marijuana or drug use, but there's a lot of other stuff as well. Now, Tony, you call Colorado sort of home. Would that be correct?
This is my winter base, yeah.
Yeah.
My home is my yurt, honestly, because I'm on the road 10 and a half months out of the year.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Basically Colorado, yeah.
So Colorado recently passed legalized marijuana.
Recreational,
right?
It's a big difference from
it was a slow accretion of laws. First, there were the medical marijuana dispensaries, which did get passed. Then there was the decriminalization by Denver. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting when the opponents of these drug legalization laws come up. They always talk about states' rights, states' rights, states' rights. The states should be able to choose. Well, when Colorado decided to choose as a state, suddenly they're talking about federal law coming out.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
You know, Obama has actually been against legalization of marijuana
quite a
for
bit.
A long time.
He's been quite enforcing it federally.
Yeah, so the...
Until recently.
Just this last week, though, the feds announced that they're not going to enforce federal drug laws in states that have legalized.
That's been a long time coming.
Yeah. I think it was this week or last week.
Yeah, it was very recent. I don't care what other people do. I mean, like, adults can make decisions for themselves. Is what I don't know. That's Molly. You and I have talked.
I feel like so. Whenever people start talking about decriminalization of recreational marijuana use, they always dovetail it with other drugs. And I genuinely don't feel that marijuana is a drug like any other thing that you classify as a drug. I think that it's more akin to alcohol and in terms of like the
regular
way,
use.
Just well, the regular use, the way it affects your brain, the way it affects your body, it's actually better for you than alcohol is long term. And so I think that whenever people say, oh, well, so you're in favor of drug legalization, it's like, well, no, I do not think heroin should be legal. Do I think that people should do heroin if they want? Fine, okay, but it's illegal because it can kill you immediately. So, I mean, it's stupid for that to not be illegal, but I'm very much in favor of federal decriminalization, if not legalization of recreational marijuana use. I think it's stupid it's illegal.
I mean, pot's fairly decriminalized in Minnesota, in Minneapolis at least. If you get caught, they'll seize it, they'll write you a ticket and send you
probably smoke it themselves.
It's a misdemeanor.
Actually, if it's Minneapolis, they'll sell it back to someone.
Yeah.
Well, one of the hardcore arguments for decriminalization of drugs in general, not just marijuana, is the tax purposes that legitimate governments can actually use to help the coffers. And in Colorado, it's been proven in just medical marijuana dispensaries alone, the first year that they actually taxed these guys, they got over $1.4 million in about 13 separate medical dispensaries over that. That's how, you know, libertarians have been talking about this for years. Once you decriminalize it, you tax it, you control it, you know, it actually helps society as opposed to driving all the illegal stuff underground where...
Yeah.
Creating a black market.
Ancillary crimes can happen.
Right.
It's been a long struggle. Now, as far as in regards to your marijuana thing, yes, but it is a drug. And long-term consequences... and I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Sure. Yeah.
Yes, on Geeks Without God. Long-term buildup of THC can inhibit short-term memory loss as well as long-term memory loss. And then when you decriminalize something, alcohol, marijuana, it pushes down the access that children have, that underage people have. Now, with better programming, with better schooling, better education, you can do a lot of prevention through peer counseling, through peer traditions and customs. But I think, and I'm kind of hardcore libertarian in this, I think all drugs should be legalized.
Fully legalized, not just decriminalized?
Fully legalized.
And taxed.
That does not get rid of people's responsibilities for their actions.
Absolutely.
Because what have we seen in crime statistics? Hardcore crime, murder, rapes, have gone down for the last 35 years.
It's very true.
But we still have an increasing prison population.
Yeah, our prison population
soft
is...
It's almost all drugs.
It's almost all drugs. And it's in many cases...
Or drug-related murders.
In many cases, it's drug...
Killing,
we're putting people in prison for using drugs.
Yes.
As we talk about a victimless crime.
Right, treating the problem.
No, I agree. Yeah. I agree with... You know, the more I think about it, I do agree with that, I guess, because of if you think about it, it's not something... It's all the problems that stem from, you know... Sure, it can kill you one time if you take heroin. I mean, obviously, and unlike marijuana, is not going to kill you. It literally can't kill you. So, I mean, there is no. Well, what is it? LD50. There's no LD50 for marijuana.
Not as far as I know.
Unless a bail falls on you.
Well, right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. But it's so
illegal.
If you're a bartender, you irresponsibly serve someone, you overserve, you make a grievous error in dispensing, you can be held accountable for someone else's misuse of that. I feel like the same thing could apply to drugs if they were legal or at least decriminalized.
I think there's a level of control that goes with legalization of drug use.
Absolutely.
That actually would make it safer.
So here's a question. Would you want it to be illegal to make your own? Because there's really strict laws about making your own alcohol in this country. Like, so would we want to make it illegal to make your own ecstasy, make your own heroin, grow your own weed?
Well, see, you know, that's a very interesting question because people do homebrew.
Right.
Yeah.
And they can't sell it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So could you make your own methamphetamine? Could you make your own blah, blah, blah? Yes, but see, if you go back to a libertarian viewpoint, which is unless it physically harms someone else or their property, it is not considered a crime. That's kind of the definition of consensual crimes.
Yeah.
If you make methamphetamine, you literally create a toxic environment in your own home.
Yeah.
So, yes, that would be a crime.
Sure.
There's some checks and balances already in place that we can approach. If you homebrew beer and you spill it or, you know, it's very hard to have an accident in homebrew beer that affects other people.
If you're distilling,
If you're distilling.
Exactly.
Like hard alcohol.
Exactly. So if they make it themselves, I see no problem with it as long as it, once again, doesn't physically harm someone else or the property.
Yeah.
As long as it's between consenting adults.
Right.
I don't think a thing should be a crime.
I guess my question is, maybe should it be a crime to sell it if the whole point of decriminalizing and legalization is for taxation and getting money for the state? Should it be illegal for someone to sell it without giving that cut to the state?
Well, okay. Let's look at the alcohol laws in place. If you go to a beer fest and you bring in homebrews, I mean, there's homebrew festivals.
Yeah.
Sure.
And they sell it and they have to be licensed.
But they pay taxes with the licensing.
Now, does that say there's not going to be sub rosa selling?
Sure. Well,
that goes on all the time.
Of course not.
You'll never be able to get rid of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can buy fake purses, sub rosa.
But you know, the interesting concept behind all of this is you think about the expense that that our government has in the drug, in the quote war on drugs, the amount of money we're spending.
Oh yeah, it's insane.
To imprison people for using.
Yeah.
Imprison people for dealing.
Which makes
them want
to use
more.
Imprison
people for engaging in criminal activity to sell an illegal product. And take it even a step further, the drug trade in Mexico and what it's doing to the Mexican to the Mexican economy, what it's doing to a lot of South American economies. And you know what? Almost all of those drugs are flowing into America.
Yeah, of course. We're their consumer of their number one export.
I buy my weed from Canada.
And if drugs become legal, if drugs become legal, then a lot of that entire system breaks down.
Yeah.
You know, which means theoretically you're going to see murder rate go down for drug related crime. You're going to see fewer people in prison, well, at least for drug use.
Yeah.
Which the, I think is
okay. I'm actually going to have to disagree with you a little bit.
Uh-oh.
All right.
In the United States, that stuff will go down.
Yeah.
But the chain of supply that stretches through second and almost third world countries down mm-hmm. to Mexico, South America, those cartels are very much in power and entrenched in their power systems. You'd have to go through and completely destructure the entire thing because once you cross the border, say all the drugs were legalized in America, and then you could approach things as far as if you're using it, then we can set up clinics for substance abuse, mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff, rather than incarceration, which I totally agree with you.
Right. And your source, you can make sure you're getting drugs from people that have been approved to do it and not...
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you move the drug supply or the drug creation into the United States where it's legal and can be taxed and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
You decimate entire economies.
Yeah, it's true.
It's wonderful to talk about the possibility of an esoteric concept.
Yeah.
But when you look at the web of interrelated stuff that stretches all the way down through South America into Afghanistan, all around the world where drugs are part of our culture, they're part of the world's economy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It can be a chain of dominoes.
Well, and who's it going to hurt the most? Not the rich cartel bosses. It's going to be hurting the people who are working security and making money for their families.
Those people are so entrenched and already committed to violence and making money through illegal means or whatever. They're questionably ethically questionable people in power. They're going to find alternate revenue schemes. They're going to find they're going to switch to human trafficking. They're going to switch to other illegal ways to make money because they don't give a fuck about the laws.
And they don't want to give a portion of their money to government. Stop them.
They're going
to
just keep doing other illegal things for the money.
When you the Godfather is fascinating in that movie because what it's about is the change of organized crime from prostitution, liquor, those sorts of things, and moving towards drugs. The Godfather character is very, very resistant to changing to dealing drugs because he thinks he has all sorts of moral problems with it, ironically.
Yeah.
you know, but it's very clear that this is where organized crime is moving. This is where the money is. But I think the point that's made there is organized crime is going to move somewhere else if drugs become legal. I mean, that's exactly what Nick's talking about. They'll figure out what the next thing is.
In America, there's labor, there's union rigging, there's all kinds of places for organized crime to go that don't necessarily even involve morally bankrupt things like human trafficking.
Them politicians.
First thing we do.
I used to volunteer for an organization called Dance Safe. We would go to raves, we'd set up a booth, and we would test people's drugs that they brought to us.
And it
was kind of like a don't ask, don't tell type situation.
Like you put
with
a
drugs.
Dropper on a pill. If it turns green, it's ecstasy. Yep. If it turns blue, don't take it.
It's like, GHB or whatever. Yeah. We'd be able to tell them what family of drugs their pill was in by just shaving a tiny bit off the top. And I would have like dealers come into a rave to sell drugs to bring their stuff to me, and I would test it for them and let them know what they had. And once or twice, I told guys that they had drugs that were going to put people in the hospital, and they threw them away and they got rid of them.
But see, that is an excellent example. Mm-hmm. Of bringing all drugs into the legalization arena where they can be tested, controlled, it's taxed, regulated.
Right.
Yeah. And,
you know, I'm not a huge guy about regulations, but guess what? We do need regulations. That's an excellent story.
That's an interesting point with libertarian ideals when it comes to this sort of thing, because generally it seems that the libertarian platform is to deregulate as much as possible. But when it comes to something like this, you couldn't. I mean, you would have to have regulations in place. So my only concern is always the people, the proponents, who generally are in the Libertarian Party that are, you know, about this. I always worry that maybe they are a little too laissez-faire and aren't willing to allow the government to do what it needs to do to make that work.
There's a difference between libertarian and anarchist.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like some people identify as libertarian and they're really more anarchist. And I think it's funny that it's like if you go so far left, crazy, crazy far left, like you get like the hippies that kind of turn like swing or punks that swing anarchist. Mm-hmm. And you go so far right.
Same thing.
You kind of come around to libertarian. To the same point. Yeah. And those two meet on the other end of the circle, kind of.
In some ways.
It, yeah. Well, yeah.
And that's once again, a good point. There is nuance.
Yeah,
of course. You know, there's no one philosophy or religion or faith or non-faith that can encompass everything.
No.
Yeah.
And people forget that. I mean, we're here right now talking, you know, Geeks Without God is talking about scientific interests, political interests, social interests from an atheistic point of view.
And don't forget the comedy. So funny.
You have comedy. Yes. Really.
This is hilarious. Drugs are hilarious.
See, this is why
I made a joke earlier.
This is why drugs should be legal, because then we wouldn't have to worry about the comedy so much. People would just, you know,
it'd just be laughing.
Be high.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, it's funny because, you know, I'm all about decriminalization of drugs. I've never done any drugs, nor will I ever.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
Too many people into emergency rooms and talk people down from
Penn Jillette.
Bad high.
Yeah, Penn Jillette.
Same thing. But one doesn't necessarily dissuade the other.
No.
Right. I don't object to other people using drugs simply because I don't want to use them.
Exactly.
That's a personal decision.
And I don't oppose to other people not wanting to, just because I enjoy them from time to time. I'm not like, oh, you guys are terrible. You're really missing out, man. Like, you should really, your minds are small. You know, like that.
Molly and I are married and monogamous. We don't have a problem with consenting adults being polyamorous or
which is another victimless crime.
Yeah.
What's the other one?
Polyandry is
many women.
Yeah.
Or no, sorry, it's many husbands. Men,
yeah.
Right.
One wife.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with polygamous relationships. I understand why they are not. I understand why polygamous marriage isn't a legally recognized thing, and that's mostly because of taxation and land ownership and the problems that stem from divorce. And it dovetails with us wanting to stick it to the Mormons back in like 1914. But yeah. I mean, like, but a big part of it is if you've got four people who are all married, like, how do you divide up children and land and property? And I know that that's very materialistic, but that's the world we live in.
But that's the legal end of it.
Yeah, but see, that's where marriage comes from.
Right. Exactly.
Is property and merging.
Yeah, it's incorporation.
But when it comes to polygamy, at least how it's been practiced, and unfortunately, you can see this in a lot of ongoing cultures in the world that still have this, is it's not as cut forward as between consenting adults. Unfortunately, most polygamous societies tend to be very patriarchal.
Yes.
And the age of the wives keep dropping. And so
the age difference between the husband and the wife.
Right.
So and maybe so the husband keeps marrying 17-year-olds, but he marries his first 17-year-old at 20.
Right. And then
his next 17-year-old at 30.
Well, it goes down to 12. You know, when you talk about Malaysia and and
But there, it's not a victimless crime. Exactly. There is a victim. The victim is
the child.
The child.
Now, would we say that the victim? Could a woman be a victim if she was an adult? Now, I mean, if someone is, like, you think about there's polygamous relationships in some cults and things like that. I mean, a person is 19, 20, and she's marrying a guy who has five other wives.
Well, if she's she's compromised and not
hard to say. I mean,
can't be making her own decisions.
It's hard to say.
Yes, I agree with you, but how do we legislate that?
Well,
exactly. Yeah.
And you can't have laws. Life is messy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you try to do laws that benefit the majority.
Yeah. Sure.
But getting back to voting, I think we talked about that before
you guys got here.
Oh, gerrymandering we were talking about.
Yeah, we were talking about.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That might be go way off topic. So.
the other thing, from a perspective of our podcast that I write about a lot, that I think about a lot, is blasphemy laws.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which are an absolute definition of a victimless crime.
Right. Yeah.
And predominantly in Islamic countries, Sharia law, but also Russia right now is awful when it comes to blasphemy laws. And the idea...
fuck is up with Russia?
The idea that Putin's consolidating power, and there's a considerable amount of church within the Russian Orthodox Church, especially since communism toppled in Russia.
Yeah.
So what's happening right now is the Russian Orthodox Church is trying to consolidate power. Putin wants to work with the most powerful elements within Russia. Right now, that's the Russian Orthodox Church. So he's basically kowtowing to just about everything that they want to do.
Yeah.
And that includes things like putting Pussy Riot into jail for blasphemy.
Yeah.
Things like the really draconian anti-gay laws that they're passing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all... But you know, also you read about if somebody in an Islamic country comes out as atheist on Facebook,
yeah,
dead.
They'll be arrested or killed.
They can be killed justifiably by the law. Like, yeah. If a neighbor is like, oh, well, I shot him because he said he told me he didn't believe in Allah and is dead.
And the thing with that is that they'll always use the defense of, well, Sharia law only applies to Muslims. Well, it's like, yeah, but if somebody says they don't believe in God, theoretically they're not a Muslim, except they were born Muslim, which mm-hmm. means they're bound by those laws. And what happens is that free thought and skepticism is just regularly squashed mm-hmm. in those yeah. countries, that you can't speak out about what's wrong with using Islam as a basis of government.
Yeah.
Because if you do, you can be imprisoned without any, without trial.
It's something that I'm
worried. We don't have that here in America.
No, well, no, yeah. But it's something that I'm worried. I can see shades
that was
of it.
Sarcasm, right?
Yeah, yeah. I can okay. see shades of it bleeding over here because no, we're not persecuted and no, we're not oppressed. But at the same time, if you try to say that you believe that their religion should be kept out of government, people freak the fuck out on you because they like mm-hmm. they think that you just don't want your politicians to have morals, and it's like that's not what we're saying.
Don't you know that the reason there's been shootings in schools is because Jesus isn't allowed in schools to
right,
stop it?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yes. All powerful God willing to let kids die to prove a point. Yes. Yes.
But
what an asshole.
But a blasphemy law again. Yeah. It's a victimless crime. There is no victim. I mean, but as an atheist, the only really realistic victim within blasphemy is God. And since God doesn't exist, there is no victim. The victim doesn't even exist.
Well, put it this way: say there is a God.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd mind because the creator of the entire universe.
Yeah.
How is he victimized by
exactly.
By somebody questioning his existence?
If there was a God, I think that he'd be offended on people being offended on God's behalf.
Right.
It's presumptuous as fuck.
But see, here's the thing, and it's very insidious about religion, is what you just said, which is if there is a God, he would think this way. And all religion.
Yeah.
That is
true.
All religions, like, well, there is this unknowable thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he, and it's usually a man,
thinks
this way.
It's I'm like, going to presume to know it.
You're just making this up.
How dare
so blasphemy laws.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a case. I was in San Diego. There's a guy who was arrested for buying meth. And after he completed his term, he was allowed to get a reduced sentence by going to a 12-step recovery program.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
And
sure.
I forget which step it is, but you have to give over your powers. You give over your problems to
there
a higher
are a lot
power.
Of,
it's
there
like
a lot
it's
of
like
steps.
Step two. It's, step two. It's like right away.
He refused to do that because he said, "Well, there's just no higher power." They sent him back to jail for an additional 90 days. However, the ACLU, thank you, got a hold of this and now are successfully bringing a lawsuit against the state
Excellent.
Of California because they imposed a religious standard.
Yep.
Yeah.
On
mm-hmm.
him. This stuff does happen. We do have religious tests for office, even though the Constitution says we're supposed to.
There's 13
we do.
States where you can't hold office if you're an atheist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Even though those are unconstitutional laws, they are on the books.
They haven't been tested to be struck down. Yeah. Someone would have to.
No, actually, they have been tested.
They're starting to be tested a lot more.
I would have to look it up, but I actually got corrected on this in a post that I did. There is a Supreme Court ruling that says those laws are unconstitutional, but they're still on the books.
Right.
Who came out as an atheist? A senator came out as an atheist in the past month.
Yeah, it was the woman. It was the bisexual atheist woman.
I'm not an atheist. I'm not anything.
It was the
I'm not
religious. Like everyone's favorite Democrat, who's like a real Democrat.
An older guy who's on the Daily Show.
Bernie.
No. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Bad radio.
Yeah. He was on.
We'll try and find that.
Yeah.
Put it in the show notes.
It popped into my mind. Like so. Yeah, we got one.
I think the biggest problem to me with any kind of victimless crime is the cost of enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The cost to free thought and free behavior. You know, we as in the United States, we value freedom so highly. We talk about it all the time.
We talk about it.
We
talk a big game.
We talk a big game, and yet there is a desire on our part to control so many aspects of
freedom on my terms.
Freedom on my terms, and that's where I think. I would like to see us move away from legislation of those kinds of crimes.
You say. I mean, you had a list of reasons why. I think in some cases it's a highly ethical reason. The euthanasia is illegal, and I mean, I think a person has the right to determine that it's time to end their suffering.
And that's entirely religious issue.
It's an entirely religious. I mean, all the arguments I can think of for being opposed to ethical euthanasia are religious and not logical.
Yeah, it's hard because
Tony is thinking and he's agreeing.
Here's one thing I would say is a lot of some people will argue.
Maybe not.
Some people will argue that the person is in a state in which they cannot they are vulnerable. They're a vulnerable adult because they are bedridden or because they are in a hospice kind of thing, and so therefore it doesn't count. Just like when I was in the mental institution, yeah. I was a vulnerable adult, and there's laws about who can and can't talk, like what people can and can't say to me.
Yeah.
If an intern had been flirting with me or whatever, he would have been fired because it's very yep. much there's right. rules about I'm basically like a child in that instance. Yes. So that there are some people that argue that when someone is that sick, that is a similar thing. I disagree, but I think there could be a way to prove faculties, but it's so hard.
I think that's what a living will is about.
Right.
You know, I think handing
of
over
sound mind and body.
Well, exactly. Yeah. If I hand over the ability to my wife to make that determination, if I say to her, look, I don't, you know, if I'm in this kind of pain, you know, you're going to know if I'm saying no, end it, or if you're going to be like, no, he's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, of course.
You know, and then I trust her to make that call as a vulnerable adult. And I think that, again, you know, it has to be it's a personal decision. It's not a...
And by the way, a year ago, we talked about gay marriage.
Yeah.
And now that they can marry...
Yes.
In Minnesota.
In Minnesota, they have those intrinsic rights as soon as they get married.
Yes.
Yes, it's true.
As opposed to going through a whole rigmarole of living will, power of a medical attorney. Yeah.
And the problem is that in those cases, there are all sorts of instances where somebody who has a moral objection to a same-sex partner having those rights based on whatever paperwork they filled out, then that individual can block those rights.
Yeah. There's times when people block it. What was that case? Was it in Florida where the woman was on...
Oh, Terri Schiavo.
Terri Schiavo.
Wow.
Where her husband was like, please let my wife die, or no, whichever.
And her mom
was like, no, keep my child alive. And it was like, who owns this woman? Well, was literally
the
U.S.
like... The U.S. Senate passed a law to inflict themselves between that.
Yeah. Which was pretty much immediately struck down.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The fact that they actually tried to pass a law, and I agree with you, most of it was more, you know, they quote moral grounds, but they're trying to, you know, throw a sock to the religious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They conflate morality with religiosity. That's the problem.
Ooh.
That's what I mean.
You are so sexy.
I like the word conflate. Like, oh, by the way, it's Barney Frank.
Barney Frank.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well done.
Yeah. So, I remember himself as an atheist.
A pot smoking atheist.
As a pot smoking atheist.
That's the quote.
Aren't they all?
By
he's
the
not,
way,
he's not running for re-election,
by the way,
is he?
when you Google Senator admits he is atheist, the top Google search is, is Barack Obama a Muslim on UrbanLegends.com?
All right.
Yes.
So when you use invective using a higher power, is that actual blasphemy?
Yeah.
Just a thought. Anyway.
We could talk about this for a really
Jesus
long time.
Jesus fucking Christ, what a
we
question.
We really could. but we need to move on to five questions.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Tony has five questions,
Tony,
for us.
Since you are on our podcast for the second time, and that means that you get to ask us five questions that we get to answer.
Okay, I sent them to you on Facebook.
You did.
Did you have a chance?
You did. I looked
them
up.
Yeah,
yeah.
We'll go over them.
Yeah.
Because off the top of my head, I can't remember. No. I think I'm good. What was the most profound thought you guys had before the age of 12?
God, that's so hard.
All right, I thought about this last night, and I really think, and mine is linked to becoming an atheist, you know, but the big one for me was when I was 11 years old, I had two best friends, David and Noah, both Jews, and we were friends, and we were talking. They were getting very excited for their upcoming bar mitzvahs, and so we were talking about that, and I was still talking to my father, still going there sometimes from post-divorce, and I was saying how they were really excited, and he's like, well, just so you know, your friends are going to hell. And I was very shocked, and I said, why is that? And he's like, well, because they're Jewish. So that's stupid. And he said, well, they haven't accepted Jesus Christ, and so, they're going to, if they accept Jesus Christ, they'll go to heaven, but you should just know, you should try to talk to them, because he was born again Lutheran at this point. And I just, right away, was like, well, that's fucking bullshit. Like, in my head, I remember just, like, crossing my arms and thinking, they're nicer than me, these kids. Like, they are better kids. Like, they are way better than me. Like, there's no way. Like, that's just the stupid, and I just, right then, I was like, well, that doesn't sound like anything a real God would want.
Yeah.
And I really started thinking about how that could possibly be, you know, like how any omnipotent thing would want to kill my two friends just for the sake of how they were born.
That's a big one.
I totally know what mine is. So I was like 9 or 10. I thought I discovered something, like, scientifically, like I thought I had made this great breakthrough, And so I did an experiment with ice, and I was trying to figure out why crushed ice or smaller ice cubes melt faster than like bigger ice chunks. And so what I had figured out on my own was that more surface area has more area for water or airflow to go over them to cool them. So there's more surface for heat exchange to occur. Mm-hmm. And so I explained the concept of surface area leading to better cooling to my father as like a thermodynamic concept. Like,
as a brand new thing.
Like I was like, look, Dad, like I invented the concept of radiant
heat.
Dad,
the data supports it.
Yeah, and I explained my experiment to him and like how it worked. And then he was very kindly explained to me why I was right and gave me, you know, he's like the actual terms like surface area. I'm like, it's more space on the outside, like square footage on the faces. Like,
that's adorable.
You know, I didn't know the right words for it and everything, and I thought I'd stumbled onto something awesome. And
you did.
You kind did. Of. Just, yeah. Just
all
not
on
first.
Your own.
Yeah.
Just not first. No, it was, that's fantastic.
I thought it was very scientifically profound.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I have trouble with this one. I mean, to me, the most profound thought that I had, and I've talked about this before, and it was wrong, but it still was. I remember this day when I was 4 years old, waking up one morning and going, "Wow, I exist! I exist!
That's very profound.
And I literally, I have no memories before that. I was like, I am alive, I am here.
That's when you achieved sentience.
And it was like that moment of that moment of sentience, that realization that I am a human being, I'm an individual, I have thoughts and I have feelings. And for a long time, even after I had rejected any kind of concept of religion, I clung on to some sort of deism simply because I was like, to me, that was like the moment that my soul entered my body. That was the moment where I actually had some sort of some being beyond just the biological existence that I had. There was sentience that was there that hadn't been there before. And to me, that was a very profound moment, that recognition of myself as an individual. And
life
so,
begins at 4 years old, actually.
Life begins, yeah. So
well,
if my parents,
that'd be a good argument to bring in,
if my parents had killed me any time before then, it would have been okay.
Well, yeah. Yeah. That's what the Abrahamic version of Kant tells us.
That would have been a victimless crime.
Yeah. Good question. That's great.
Yeah, it's great.
My most profound thought was at the age of 4 when I realized my father could be wrong. And what that said to me is that all these adults, these beings who are twice to three times my size, who had ultimate control over my life, could be flawed and could be wrong.
Yeah.
I was on my own.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
So my issues with authority sprang from there.
Ah, uh-huh. Sure.
There you go.
That's good. That's
okay, second question. If you could, because we're geeks and I'm a huge space geek, if you had to be exiled to any planet or orbiting body in our solar system for the rest of your life by yourself, you could live there. I mean, you could, you know, live out a normal lifestyle.
There would be whatever technology.
Not Earth.
Yeah. Not Earth.
And it'd be life-sustaining.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where would you go? What would you pick?
The moon. I would pick the moon. That's actually pretty easy for me because of the Earthrise picture from the Apollo missions. It's just like, I already know that the view from there would be pretty fucking awesome. And it's not about a thing of, oh, I'd be super close to Earth. It's just, I already know what Earthrise would look like from the moon. And I could live with that. I could live with that.
I feel like living on the moon would make me super lonely because I'd be able to see the Earth all the time. But I would like to live on Mars. I think that I always like the idea. I like the red sands. We went to the Valley of Fire once in Nevada, and the sand, it was so cool. And just, when I was a kid, I remember thinking, it's like, this is what it's like on Mars. Like, this is exactly like Mars. Because it's just that brick red everywhere, and you can't see anything else. And I think that'd be really cool.
If you want Mars, just go into the gravel quarry.
Yeah.
Seriously.
It's like a BBC sci-fi set.
I think, so for our solar system, there's the inner planets, and there's the outer planets. And between them, there's this, like, really big, huge, busy asteroid field that protects the inner planets from like all the bullshit in the outer solar system. I think that would be a great place to live because, like, if you ever got tired of your asteroid, you could just find another asteroid that's like the size of Pluto or whatever. There's huge masses there. There's all sorts of valuable mineral resources there.
So you want to be a belt nomad?
Is that the Van Allen belt?
Yeah. Wait. Van Allen belt is what protects us from magnetic radiation.
I think it's just the asteroid belt.
I think it's the main belt or main asteroid belt.
So
no, that's the Kuiper belt is the outer belt
circuit.
That like Pluto. Was a part of.
Isn't that the Kuiper belt, not the Kuiper?
Kuiper belt. Sorry, KUI. Right. So I'd want to, because you could be like asteroid nomad, and plus like So you'd get an awesome view of the inside of the galaxy, inside of the solar system. Yeah. You could see, like, the Earth and all that. But then from there out, there's, like, nothing obscuring your view out on the disk. And I think there's kind of, like, what's the Little Prince?
Yes.
Yeah. There's kind of something a little bit romantic about living on a small asteroid.
Sure. Especially if you're by yourself.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
It'd
never be boring. You could, just, you know, I don't like this asteroid anymore. Hop.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
So,
how about you?
The moon.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I would pick the moon of Titan. I could get a Jupiter rise and.
Sure.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Sure.
That would be cool too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So the third one is, what was your first ethnic food? Outside of your own.
Yeah. Curry mock duck. I was raised vegetarian. There was a Vietnamese restaurant in the suburb next door as a kid, and Vietnamese restaurant. They had curry mock duck. They had a lot of, you know, Vietnamese food, and my childhood, like, dining out special food was curry mock duck, and I don't remember anything prior to that. It was just, I could live off that. It was so spicy and so good.
We ate other ethnic food all the time when I was a kid, so I don't know what my first one was. We just constantly were eating Vietnamese food, Chinese food, my mom. But I went to Spanish camp for 5 summers, and my first one was when I was 10, and we had, like, authentic Argentinian and Spanish cuisines. And I remember we had this amazing white fish that was stuffed with tomatoes and a cheese. And it doesn't sound, it sounds weird altogether, like, but it was so good. And I tried to recreate it when I got home. I was convinced I could make it. So my mom, like humored me and let me stuff a fish with tomatoes and cheese, and it was fucking awful. Just inedible. But that's the first time I remember, like, being exposed to something that wasn't just, oh, this is Mexican food, or oh, this is Vietnamese food in America.
And but, super authentic,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah, very,
like,
authentic.
One specific culture's.
Yeah.
The ethnic food I remember eating most as a child was Chinese. And I know that my favorite was egg foo young. I mean, we would go to a restaurant and I would get egg foo young,
so,
and I would
salty.
Eat all of it. And, well, I don't like it anymore, actually. Not because I dislike it's super eggy. It's super eggy. I don't dislike eggs, but I don't like too much eggs in my food.
Taste change over your life.
Yeah, and but egg foo young was the thing that I remember eating most often when I was a child. That was my favorite.
Excellent. When I was 8 years old, I came across a Mexican restaurant that my dad, one of his patients, was. I walked in, I had all these smells that I'd never smelled before, offered, and I ordered a burrito, which, you know, later burrito.
Yeah.
And she goes, red or green? I went, red. It's okay. And I'd never had spicy up to this point.
Oh.
And I took a bite, and my head exploded. And out of nowhere, she handed me a Coke, which is really nice. But when I took that one bite, and my tongue burst into flame, mm-hmm. it was like a door opened in my heart, and I realized the possibilities.
Oh, yeah.
Of ethnic food.
That's amazing.
And it was amazing. It just completely opened up.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow.
I had a fifth question, but I really want to change this because this is...
Well, you're
Geeks
on
without...
four.
This is four?
That was
no,
this is four. Four.
Okay.
This is four.
So four is if you could have a completely different skin, eye, and hair color.
Oh, that's right. The alien.
That's not human. What would you choose?
I like Nick's answer. Or was it Molly's?
It was mine. So I can't remember her name. The lizard woman on Doctor Who, who's Jenny's girlfriend.
The Victorian lizard woman.
Yeah, the Victorian lizard woman. I would love to have her skin. I love
her
skin.
She's pretty. She's
it's
pretty.
It's so beautiful. And it looks like it would feel so nice. And it'd be all smooth and, like, and yet, like, cool, like a snake is.
I think I would go to something a lot more subtle. But, like, green eyes that are a little too green to be human, like kind of a slight fluorescing, just a little too bright would be great, I think.
Mm-hmm. Fluorescing green eyes.
Yeah,
cool.
Mm-hmm.
That would be cool. Is that it? Just the
That's it. Maybe if they give me the ability to see into the ultraviolet spectrum, that would be dope.
Awesome.
Yeah. I want to see a bird see.
You know, this is a hard one for me. I guess you know, purple hair. I like purple a lot. Mm-hmm. I'd go for
like
purple.
Naturally purple hair, not
like natural,
Jeremy
not like dyed purple.
So like your eyebrows,
your
eyelashes,
all your hair.
You know, like Hiroshi.
Like the carpets match the drapes hair.
My brain! Oh my god, my brain!
Purple stubble would look so cool.
It would.
If it grew in that way.
Because your face, even after you're freshly shaved, your face, you would have a slight violet sheen to your, because the hair under your skin discolors your face for men. Mm-hmm. You would kind of have a purple 5 o'clock sheen, like Homer Simpson, but you would have violet.
Purple, Nick, you'd have a purple back. I would. You would look like Grimace.
I would be a walking Grimace costume.
I've kind of exploded this question a little bit in my own mind. I would like basically a complete ability to camouflage. So whatever, if I was at woodland,
will?
At will.
Not at will.
At will, because that could get really embarrassing.
Uncomfortable. Yeah.
But, you know, whether it's an urban environment or... Because in one of the Addams family, Wednesday Addams painted herself up to look like the wallpaper.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, Gautier a video.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So the last question, I've completely changed because I find this whole concept of atheism fascinating. And obviously you have a geek.
Mm-hmm.
When was the age you truly thought of yourself and or came out as an atheist?
I'm trying to figure out the
age. Yeah, I'm trying to remember the exact.
I'm going to jump in here because I thought of this question.
Yeah, yeah.
And for me, it was 49.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's only been 5 years for me.
I'm going to say, we'll see. Well, when we got married, I was 29. So I'm going to say probably 30 because it was right after we got married. Up until then, I'm for the 4 years preceding that, I had declared myself an apatheist or a non-theist, just nothing. Like, I didn't care, it didn't matter. And I was an atheist, but I wasn't out and proud in the sense of, like, no, fuck you, I'm an atheist, and if you have a problem with it, you have a problem with me. You know, as opposed to just being like, eh, just didn't. But when I was in the hospital, I would not go to the forced religious meetings. I made them let me have free time instead, and they couldn't make me go. And I was very adamant about it. I'm like, I'm not going to go to the spirituality group. I'm like, well, it's just spirituality, it's not religion. I'm like, I'm not spiritual. I'm not going to the spirituality group. I will sit here, I will journal, I will think my own thoughts, I will knit, but I'm not going.
That is a great response, because so many people, well, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual.
Yeah.
What the hell does that mean?
Yeah. I'm not spiritual.
Some people, it does matter to them.
Yeah.
But for atheists, it's like, we're not spiritual.
Yeah.
We're kind, we're comfortable.
Yeah.
We're a gamut of variety.
I'll be introspective, if it's supposed to be introspective hour. Yeah. Like, I'll do that.
Molly and I have an argument, a standing argument about whether or not atheists can be spiritual, because as I define spiritual, I believe that there is something greater than myself, not supernatural. I feel that humanity as a whole, our potential as a race... is more
space
important
and earth,
than me.
Spiritual.
The entire universe. There's so much out there that's could be amazing and is bigger than us. That we're individually very, very insignificant. And I feel that is a spiritual thing to acknowledge without any magic or elves or space beards. Okay. That's how I define it.
And I say spiritual means it has to have spirit, which is a supernatural thing.
Yep.
And we're not going to get into the argument.
We've almost gotten into that argument. This is probably the fourth time.
Yeah. It's been brought up.
Someday we'll have to actually just do that podcast.
but it is an individual.
Exactly.
Of your own life.
It is an individual definition.
So what about you?
When did religion stop being like just a hassle and an obligation and become like something that I adamantly don't believe in? Because I always didn't care for religion, but I think it had to be around when we started going to Unitarian Church, around when my mom came out, maybe 12 or 13.
Okay. You started self-identifying as an atheist when you were 13? I don't remember you even telling me. I mean, second guess you here, but you didn't tell me you're an atheist until we were married. Easy.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about almost a formal declaration to your community and the world around you.
Probably around the same time as Molly.
Yeah.
Then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think I've been trying to do the math. For me, I think it's probably been about 5 years for me as well. It was when I was about 40 that I started speaking openly about it. And I think that's because... at that time, I was reading a lot of skeptical atheist blogs. There was a group of people that was doing a skeptic track at Convergence. And as I started watching what they were doing, as I read some of their writing, especially P.Z. Myers, I realized how important it was, if I didn't believe in God, to self-identify. And to be out about it.
Religious. Yes, religious. When we saw religious,
That to me was super important. It was that moment when I said... I can't just be a quiet atheist.
Yes. Yeah.
I need to be out about it. I need to be clear about it. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in God, and what does that mean? But it means I'm the same guy that I was yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm just being open about what I believe. The same way Christians are open about what they believe.
The same way when people come out of the closet as being, when celebrities say it doesn't matter to anybody who I have sex with. It doesn't matter if I come out as gay. It's like, but it does. Because you're a public figure.
At this moment,
it does. At this moment right now. If you say, Kevin Spacey, if you just admit you're gay, like, if there's people who will be like, oh, good.
They need to know it's okay.
Not a secret. Yeah. It's not a shameful thing.
Religious came out in 2008. And at the end of that movie, there's this like cry to arms about why it matters to be counted as an atheist and why it matters to be verbal about it.
Yeah.
And that timeline might be a coincidence or might not be a coincidence, but that's pretty close to the time.
I know we're getting at the end of the podcast, but I just want to say the reason I asked for the formal self-declaration of atheism, because I want to point out once again how pervasive religion, especially Christianity here in the United States, permeates our society. You guys had these thoughts at a very young age. We all had our journey, our struggle against this concept, and it wasn't even until we're well into our adult years before we can actively feel comfortable with our own selves and courageous enough for ourselves to step out as an atheist.
Yeah.
And man, whether it comes to families proselytizing you in your own family, to the world around us, you know, the Ten Commandments in schools and public, it is an unbelievable fight. So it absolutely matters that we step out, we're out and we're proud, and we take our, you know, we take that terminology, that nomenclature from our LGBT sisters and brothers. You know, we're not persecuted near as bad, but we are persecuted. We can be persecuted, but we do have some freedom.
It's not a competition.
We don't believe. We won't leave. We're not going to go anywhere.
Our brain is not a sieve.
But in the sense, it's not necessarily that we're not persecuted, but we are being forced to live with the beliefs of others.
There's suppression.
While our beliefs are considered unacceptable.
It's not necessarily oppression, but it's definitely suppression.
Yeah.
We are expected to suppress our atheist beliefs and the way we think about things because it's not fair to other people and it makes other people uncomfortable.
And there's this regular conversation.
You don't have the right to not be offended.
This regular conversation about asshole atheists and, atheists are so...
You're one of the good ones.
Angry.
Why are they angry?
You're one of the good ones, at least. You guys are at least good about it.
Preachy.
Well, he's so well-spoken.
When just a question against someone's religious belief is considered an attack.
Exactly.
That's why a lot of atheists are considered angry. And some of us are really fucking angry because we've been having to fight against this.
I am angry. There's a lot of shit to be angry about.
Yeah. 150-foot crosses being tried to be built instead of eating people.
Unfortunately, anger never... It's just, you know, like blacks marched to vote to civil rights. You know, Martin Luther King was so successful because he was better. He acted better.
Yeah.
And the group, by and large, acted better than the people who were oppressing them.
Yeah.
He was so successful, they had to kill him so they can make everyone angry again, because that works less. That's really what it was.
Anger is an acceptable emotion to feel. Anger can be very useful. Anger can be very productive.
But it's got to be focused in productive ways.
Anger is the fire that tempers the steel.
Yeah,
you can't let it be the fire that burns everything down.
You're so poetic.
I am.
Oh, it can be dangerous.
So sweet.
Guys, I do have to get back to work.
We got to be done. We all have to get back to work. So anyway, this was awesome. Thank you for joining us again, Tony.
Yay.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
It was fun.
We will we'll catch you probably next year.
Probably next year. And by the way, your theme song, Geeks Without God, it's like an earworm.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that.
I'm really sorry.
We're geeks without God. We don't believe in moral authority. Okay. Anyway, so
there it is. All right. I don't need to even play the closing
text. No, that's all.
All right.
I hate you.
Thanks
guys.
A lot, Tony.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Now that that's over, let's all toke up and stick it to the man.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks. God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
I don't even care how long it is, that was amazing.